Welcome to The Ralph Report with Ralph Garman.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to The Ralph Report for a Wednesday. It is May the 16th, 2018, and so good to have you here with me. Thanks for hanging out. And also, thanks to everybody who's been writing in and leaving messages this week, getting a ton of feedback from all you guys in the Garmy. And it's good to know you're out there. And we're having a conversation. It's got to be a back and forth thing. That's how it works. So I want to thank everybody who's been reaching out. Some good stuff this week. Speaking of reaching out and back and forth and a conversation, I want to remind all the 3- and 4-star generals that this Sunday, that is May 20th, this Sunday, we are having our monthly live stream video chat. So if you want to hang out with me via video and talk about whatever we want to talk about. Usually my wife is there fielding the questions, and my kid Olivia stops by, and Reggie the Wonder Dog usually makes an appearance. We do this every month, so you can come on out, hang with me. I will be there on your video screen for better or for worse. You know, as they say, I do have a face for radio, but I will be there visible for you. And you can ask me whatever you want, and we'll talk. That is this Sunday. It is May 20th, and it is happening at noon Pacific time here in the States. So you got to do the math for yourself. But quickly, if it's noon here, I'm trying to do the math. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon on the East Coast of the United States. It is 8 p.m. in the UK, I think. I think it is, 4 days later and 2015 in Australia. You guys have some crazy time rules. Anyway, figure it out. And if you are so inclined, I will be sending out a link, of course, on Sunday for you to click in. It's pretty easy to get to. And then there we are, noon on Sunday the 20th. I'll be doing this month's live stream event. Thanks to everybody who wrote in this week. We did talk about Prius drivers. Apparently, I hit a nerve. We were talking about the fact that some folks, and I got to come clean, myself included, seem to notice that when we're on the open road, Prius drivers are a particular pain in the ass. Why is that? We didn't know the answer, so we threw it out there for the Garmy, and man, we got a ton of some very rude emails regarding that at ralph@theralphreport.com, of course, is where you can always reach me. A lot of people say, like I said, I hit a nerve. A lot of people cheesed off at the Prius drivers out there. I don't know what it is. Why do we particularly take notice of Prius drivers being bad drivers? Benjamin Buchanan wrote in. Here was his theory. He said, "Hi, Ralph, I have an answer about Prius drivers. It may not be the right one, but I've experienced these people firsthand. They have their heads so far up their ass, thinking their shit doesn't stink because they're going green, that they can't pay attention to the road." I don't know if that's the reason or not, Ben Buchanan, but it made me laugh. Listen, Prius drivers obviously care about the planet, and they're trying to reduce their carbon footprint, and they're probably trying to save some money so they don't have to pay so much at the gas pump. I get all the good reasons, and I'm not really, you know, denigrating Prius drivers. They seem like good people, but they just can't drive. This one came from Jeff. Jeff is a former Prius driver himself, and he has got what I think may be a reasonable explanation behind why people who drive Priuses have a hard time negotiating the highways and byways of this great nation along with the rest of us. He said it's the car. He said, "I will never buy Toyota again as long as I live." He claims Prius drivers aren't inherently bad. It's the car that makes us bad. And he goes on to list a long list of problems he had with his Prius when he was driving it. Everything, he said, the car was a real piece of crap. Everything from ranging from the doors that wouldn't lock to a radio whose Bluetooth software would crash if I had too many text messages on my phone. Radio problems can be distracting while driving, he said. Sure, but the other problems eventually led me to being in a rotten and or depressed mood every time I started the car. Think about it. If your car is a piece of shit and you hate driving it, once you get behind the wheel, you're not going to be at your peak performance, that's for sure. He said, The key thing is my Prius was a literal drag on the road. He said, many people perceived me as being a shit driver, but it could have been just me slowly dying inside while flooring the gas pedal, begging this brand new car to please make it up the next hill. So maybe a lack of guts for that car makes drivers struggle with it. Maybe it's the actual vehicle itself that is difficult to operate and causes problems on the road. So I wanted to take that excuse. I'll take that reason. Excuse. I'm already putting it down. It's a reason. It's a reasonable reason behind why some Prius drivers struggle. I want to take Jeff's word for that. So that's what happened. So thanks to everybody. I think we've come to the a conclusion that we can all live with. It saves face for the Prius drivers, and it lets the rest of us vent and get it off our chest how we feel about Prius drivers. So there you go. That's handled. Another member of the Garmy reached out this week as well. I was talking about, I guess this was on Monday, I was reflecting on Mother's Day and putting that in the context of kids that we're raising these days and how it has to change given the realization and really for a lot of us the awakening to the fact that there's so much sexual and physical abuse coming from men towards women in the world. And we all knew it existed, but to this extent, as you see, celebrity after celebrity exposed to people that were once held in high regard, now obviously scumbags. And so we talked about the fact that my mother raised me to be a gentleman. And that was ingrained in me from an early age from her and how much I appreciated that fact. And I said, just because I was a gentleman never held me back being masculine or manly or whatever you want to say when it comes to women, that I wasn't a milquetoast. And I guess this is not a common phrase for a lot of people. It seemed to throw some people for a loop, like this listener.
Hey, Ralph, big fan. I just want to ask, what the hell is milquetoast? You said that you weren't milquetoast with the ladies, and like it wasn't anything. Like, I don't think that's a common thing. Please explain. Thank you.
Yes, he reached out via the Ralph Report hotline, which is 833-HI-RALPH, if you want to reach me. First of all, sir, you are not milquetoast. It is not an adjective. It is a noun. You are a milquetoast. And what that means is, for those who aren't familiar, and once I did I'd heard it my whole life, and I'd used it my whole life. But once I did some research on the actual term, it struck me as perhaps why some people may not know it so much anymore. Milquetoast, first of all, it's spelled in a funky way. It's milquetoast, but pronounced milquetoast. A milquetoast, as by defined in the dictionary, is a very timid, unassertive, spineless person, especially one who is easily dominated or intimidated. That is what a milquetoast is. So I was saying I was not a milquetoast when it came to interacting with women, simply because I was raised to be a gentleman. You can be both. You can be aggressive and hold your ground and be manly, but also be respectful and of women and not aggressive or abuse them in any way. So here's the thing, though. I did not know the source of the phrase being a milquetoast until I did a little research, and here's where it comes from. It comes from a comic strip, a newspaper comic strip from the 30s, and the character's name was Casper Milquetoast. The name of the comic strip was The Timid Soul, and there was a created by a guy named H.T. Webster who made this character, Casper Milquetoast, a spineless little timid man who, as he put it, speaks softly and got hit with a big stick. And he named him Milquetoast because apparently in the 30s, milquetoast was a thing. It was an actual food. It was toast, as you can imagine, that had a cream sauce put on it, and you would give it to sick people, especially kids. Apparently it was a very light, easy to digest food for kids who were sick, who had bad stomachs or whatever. You would give them milquetoast. So it was considered, sappy, soft, light, And that's why they used that term for this character. So it becoming so being a milquetoast became a popular phrase in America, apparently in like the 30s and 40s. But I had always heard it, and so that's why I used it. So there you go. We're here not just to entertain, but to educate. So from now on, if someone is like a spineless little weasel, you can call him a milquetoast, and you'll be hip with all the kids from the 1930s. Look, I assumed it was still being used. Maybe I'm wrong, but maybe we can bring it back. Maybe we can bring back milquetoast. All right, there you go. There's your lesson for the morning. Now, what do you say we get on with the entertainment news for the day? And the first thing I want to do is give a shout out to my pal Shannon Doherty. She is back in the hospital. When I first saw this news, I was a little nervous. I was afraid maybe it has something to do with her cancer reoccurring, but apparently she is simply undergoing reconstructive surgery. More than 2 years after her first breast cancer diagnosis, she did have a mastectomy, and so they are reconstructing her breastuses in the hospital, and she was in there over the weekend. She posted a photo with her mom from her hospital bed on Sunday saying, "Happy Mother's Day, Mom. I only bring you to the best places. Hospital food, yum." So, yes, apparently she's fine, and she's undergoing some reconstructive surgery. And, of course, we wish Shannon Doherty the best. I don't know if you guys know the story or not. Many of you probably do. But Shannon, of course, is a friend of Kevin's, Kevin Smith's. They worked on Mallrats together. And then when Kevin was developing a pilot for a sitcom for CBS, he cast Shannon and myself in the pilot, and we had a great time making it. We had a really good time, and Shannon and I hit it off, and we became friendly. So I just want to send that out to her and let her know I'm thinking of her, and I hope that she's feeling great soon. Speaking of feeling great soon, I don't know anymore about Stan Lee. I don't know what to believe anymore. You know, he has been in the news lately because a lot of people around him apparently are leading him astray, and then there was talk of him being sort of held against his will, and he couldn't get word out, and now he's filing all these lawsuits, but we're not sure if it's really him or whether people are influencing him. It's so hard to tell. But he has filed a lawsuit against POW Entertainment, and if you know Stan at all, you know that POW Entertainment was his company that he started after he left Marvel. It was called Purveyors of Wonder, POW Entertainment, and he was developing comic book characters and television programs and things like that. Anyway, he sold the company last year to an international holding company in Hong Kong, and he claims that the people who got him to sell used his deteriorating eyesight. He's got macular degeneration. Apparently, it's causing him to lose his eyesight at his advanced age. And they tricked him into signing some papers that gave away, in essence, exclusive rights to things that he held dear, like his name, like his Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook accounts. They had the rights to use those. So he is suing the men involved in the sale, Shane Duffy and Gil Champion, who had him sign away these exclusive rights against his wishes, according to the suit, and also the company as well. He is suing to the tune of in excess of $1 billion. And I don't know what Stan's worth. I mean, his name? Yeah, I guess it would be worth that as much as the creator of all those Marvel characters. Anyway, we'll follow this closely. But again, you don't know whether this is Stan's doing or someone else is pulling the strings trying to get money from Stan's situation. I just don't know. It just makes me sad. I'm hoping that this is Stan's choice and this is what's best for him. But as you know, if you've been reading the stories lately, it's hard to tell exactly what that is. Well, prom season is officially upon us. And parents across America are scrambling for boutonnieres and corsages and dresses and shoes and tuxes. And celebrities are no exception. There were some great photos in the UK's Daily Mail tabloid that caught Harrison Ford escorting his son Liam to a tux shop in Santa Monica, California. And he was helping him pick out a suit and shirt for his prom. Liam is Calista Flockhart's adopted son. She adopted Liam before Harrison and Calista started dating back in 2002, and when they married in 2009, Harrison adopted Liam as well. So it's cute to see Harrison Ford out there being all dad. Apparently, while they were shopping for the kid's tux, Harrison was heard saying,
cummerbund. And then when you go ahead and put that saying with you.
So, I wish them all the best. I'm sorry, England. So sorry. I feel so bad. This must be what Canada felt like when they gave us Bieber. Rumor has it Taylor Swift is giving up her property here in the States and moving to England. Ah, I feel so bad. You're going to have a fascist pop star living with you. Tadolf Swindler is invading England. Hasn't England endured enough fascism with Hitler in the 40s? Now they got to put up with Tadolf Swindler? Apparently she is giving up her swanky digs in Beverly Hills and is moving to England. Rumor has it that her relationship with Joe Alwyn is getting serious and she's ready to make a permanent move to his home base in England. So that means she won't be our problem anymore. And I love our neighbors in England. I feel bad about this. Got to reach out to Steve Ashton and apologize in person and see if we can somehow come to an arrangement here. I don't know what we can do. We're going to have to give them reparations or make some sort of trade, a cash deal or something, a player to be named in the future. Something. We owe England big time for this one. The King is returning. The King of Late Night is coming back, at least for one night. Anyway, David Letterman is joining host Seth Meyers on Late Night as a special guest on May 23rd. That'll be Wednesday, next Wednesday, a week from today. David Letterman will be our guest on Late Night with Seth Meyers on Wednesday, May 23rd, they tweeted out. So he's coming back, and no word on what he'll be doing on there other than just hanging out with Seth. But anytime he's on television, that's must-watch TV for me. I will be checking that out. Of course, he also has his own show now. Over there on Netflix, he's got long-form interviews that he does on his show that is called My Guest Needs No Introduction. So he may be promoting that, but whatever the reason is, checking out Letterman, always a must. And while we're talking about interviews, Jennifer Lopez was interviewed for InStyle magazine, and she came clean on the fact that early in her career, she was pressured from every direction to lose weight from the entertainment industry, from her management, from people who wanted to hire her. She said, I got a lot of flack for it from people in the industry. They'd say, you should lose a few pounds, or you should do this or do that. And Jennifer Lopez said she resisted because she grew up in a family that everyone was small in stature in terms of height, but curvy. And she always thought that was beautiful. And I agree. I think she looks terrific, by the way. And she is not in any way, shape, or form overweight either. It's crazy, the entertainment industry, when you see the women or you hear these stories about women who were told to lose weight and you look at them and you think, these people must be mental. And so many women in the industry are ultra thin, which I think is not an attractive look. But it's the pressure they get from the industry. Rarely, in fact, is it their choice. I have friends of mine who are actresses who said they've been hungry for 12 years. You know, they just don't eat because they have to maintain that look, which is heartbreaking. But I think Jennifer's in amazing shape, by the way. She's a dancer all the time. She's constantly working out. You always see her coming from the gym or going to the gym, which blows my mind. Because I'm doing this little rinky-dink show, and I can barely find time anymore to go to the gym. Because I'm interviewing people, or I'm editing stuff, or I'm recording stuff. I can't do it. Jennifer Lopez is 100 times busier than I am with all the stuff she's got going on. How can she find time in her schedule to go to the gym? She is such a busy lady. She's doing that Shades of Blue show on NBC. She's got the World of Dance show that she produces as well. She's touring. She's recording. She's performing live. Her schedule is jam-packed. You wouldn't think there'd be a chance to find any room in that schedule anywhere for her to fit in a workout at the gym. And I thought about it, and I couldn't come to grips with how she makes that happen. But then, you know what? It struck me. Once I really took a good, long, hard look, it struck me. There's always room for J-Lo. For those of you who never heard me on the radio in Los Angeles, you must have no idea why that recurring bit keeps happening on this show. But all right, real quick, I'm going to explain it once, and then we're going to never speak of this again. But
back in the old time, you kiddies, there was a commercial for a delicious dessert treat called Jell-O.
And Jell-O one of their hooks was that, you know, oh my God, I'm so full, I can't have dessert. And they would say, no, but there's always room for Jell-O. And it's saying that it was the perfect dessert because it was sweet and light and it wouldn't fill you up after a meal. So there's always room for Jell-O was an ongoing campaign for that company for a long time. And so J-Lo, which is her nickname, for me always just made put those two things together in my head. And so that's why that Shaggy Dog story was invented years ago. And it continues to live on here on The Ralph Report. All right, before we close out here, let's take a look and see who was born on this day, May 16th. All these celebrities were born. Pierce Brosnan was born on this day 65 years ago. Still one of the great Bonds. I know he gets the short shrift sometimes. Some of the movies weren't great, I will grant you. But the same could be said with Roger Moore. But I like Pierce Brosnan a ton. He is 65, still looks great too, bastard. Deborah Winger, very lovely and talented actress, is 63. You know, you may not know this, but one of her first gigs, her big high-profile gigs, was as Wonder Girl on the Wonder Woman TV series with Linda Carter. There you go. A little trivia for you. Bassist Chris Novoselic of Nirvana, and sometimes Foo Fighters, 53 years old today. Janet Jackson, 52 years old. David Boreanaz is 49 years old. Another Philly boy. Big Eagles fan, too, David. Tracy Gold of Growing Pains is 49. Tori Spelling turns 45 years old today. And Megan Fox from Transformers fame and also the Ninja Turtles, 32 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat. Well, this week, the big news isn't just coming out of Hollywood. It's coming out of Washington, D.C. as well. The Supreme Court of the United States of America with a big decision this week that is going to impact everyone like myself who loves sports, especially if you're a football fan. But hell, every sport's going to be affected by this. They've said that the states can decide for themselves whether to legalize gambling or not. It used to be only the state of Nevada was allowed to have state-licensed sports betting. But now the biggest court in the land said everybody can do it. All 49 other states can also join in and make a buck off of sports betting. This is big sports news. And whenever we talk sports, of course, we turn to my pal from Yahoo Sports, Jay Busby. I call him Buzz. And that's why we have this segment called What's the Buzz? What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening. What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening. Jay Busby, I just have one question for you. What are the odds of the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles repeating next season? I need to lay some money down.
Well, fortunately, you'll be able to lay money down almost anywhere. Maybe not next year, but very soon, my friend. And the odds look good, and we'll be able to bet on them before too much longer.
Now, what's going on? This week, the Supreme Court of the United States made their decision that said the states are allowed to have sports gambling throughout the nation. Now, what exactly does this mean for us?
Well, if you've ever been to Vegas, and I assume that you have, my friend, but for anyone listening, if you've ever been to Vegas, one of the best spots is the sports book where you can go and bet on any sporting event in the country. And they've got everything you can imagine, but it's only in Nevada for right now. What this decision does is it opens the door for states all over the country to set up their own sports books, their own sports betting industries, their own mini Vegases, wherever you like. So you could go and bet on the Eagles at a gas station if it works out to that degree, to in whatever state that you're in. It's a huge, huge decision because think about what an impact fantasy football had on football. People like pay attention to the crap games now because they've got a player. Imagine how much more attention they're going to be paying to that crappy Titans-Browns game on Thursday night if they've got money riding on it. So this is a monumental decision. It's going to ripple for a few years. But, I mean, this I'm not joking when I say this is one of the most important things to happen to sports in a long, long time.
Now, this obviously benefits the leagues and the team owners, like you said, because this will cause interest in games that wouldn't ordinarily get that much attention. I'm sure the TV networks are going to be happy because it'll probably increase viewership as well. But what does it mean for the states? Will these be state-run books? Will these be individually owned companies? Will it be an internet business? Exactly what form do we think we'll see these gambling sports books take place?
Well, you know, anybody that is that's seen The Godfather knows how these things work, that people have to the state has to wet its beak. And so none of these things are going to be floating out there alone without state government oversight. But from there, what will happen is there'll be a state commission of some sort. In some cases, it'll be a gaming commission. In Kentucky, it's going to be the horse racing commission. They'll have other whatever commission that the state decides is going to run it. We'll run it and we'll orchestrate how old you can be, how you would go about betting, that sort of thing. You know, but what they'll have to do is figure out what the taxes are, because there will be taxes on your winnings. You're not going to be able to get away scot-free without paying the government its share. But the main thing is that this is not going to be an instant fix. I mean, some places are already ready. New Jersey, for instance, is going to have its first sports book open up on Memorial Day weekend. They were ready to go. But other places, it's not even on the radar yet. I live in Georgia. It's not even a hint of consideration of a sports gambling pool at this point. So it's going to depend entirely on the states. Some are much farther ahead than others.
Now, will existing casino operations like the Indian casinos in California or Arizona, let's say, will they be able to open up sports books at their casinos, or will this be a separate issue completely?
I think it's going to be a state by state, but that's a great question. And with a lot of the states, what they're doing is, like, for instance, Connecticut and Oklahoma both have tribal casinos. But what they have to do is in order the tribal casinos control all the gambling in the state. So if they're going to have a sports book, it's got to run through there. So states like that will have to organize in connection with whatever the tribal casino is to run it that way. I mean, it's 50 different states, 50 different operations. Basically, all this does is it opens up the gates and says, okay, you guys figure it out in a way that they haven't been able to before. But I think what you're going to see is once they realize just how freaking much money is going to be made, is going to be passing through, every state is suddenly going to get over its moral fears and is going to cut through that bureaucracy in a hurry and start offering some form of gambling.
Right. You mentioned The Godfather. How in the world did Vegas and organized crime allow this to happen? How did they let go of the golden goose?
I tell you what, I mean, I think that Vegas is happy with it in the sense that the corporations that run Vegas are going to be more than happy to extend their reach out. But organized crime, if you are of a conspiratorial bent, organized crime took a bit of a hit here. I mean, all of a sudden, all this, what's the fastest way to make organized crime go away or to reduce their influence is to make something illegal. We know this to make it legal, rather, not illegal. We know this from Prohibition. So, it's going to be interesting to see how this affects the kind of underground economy, because I mean, I'm not sure if you've heard about this, but there are people who do bet illegally right now outside of Nevada. I mean, I don't know any of them myself. I know. I mean,
I think I would have heard about such things if they existed.
I know. It's just it's a stain on our national character. But but fortunately, those people will be able to walk in the light rather than the shadow now.
And I assume this means offshore betting parlors that you wager on via the internet. Those will go away as well. If you could do it in your own backyard, why would you bother sending money to Barbados or someplace?
That's the trick. Yeah. If you don't have to go and try and figure out some way to wire them $100 to pay off your measly debt for some terrible Thursday night game. But that's the thing is, it opens all of this up, and you're going to pay a little bit more in taxes. You're not going to get back your full winnings. But for what makes it so much easier is that a lot of people are going to be all in for this, because it means that you don't have to go and try and wire money to the Bahamas or wherever to make your bets. You can just do it at your local 7-Eleven or whatever.
Now, I know some states like New York State and others have what they call OTBs, the off-track betting parlors, where you can go to wager on horse racing and things like that. I wonder if we will see separate sports books spring up in certain states. Well, maybe they'll even have cocktails or food, and you'll sit there and watch the game. It'll be like a sports bar, only you'll have betting involved as well.
I think that's exactly what's going to happen. And not only that, that's going to be good enough in itself, because, you know, like you and I need more of a reason to sit around and drink and watch sports. But what's going to be really fascinating, man, is the live betting. I mean, imagine sitting there and watching a game on TV and or watching it from the stands and being able to bet, hey, I think that you know, the Patriots are going to score before the end of the half. Hey, I think this golfer is going to make a par on this hole. I mean, it's going to be amazing to see how the live bets come through, because the standard betting, you know, against the spread, betting the over under, that's routine stuff. But the technological aspect of this, I mean, that's why I say it's such a huge story, because we can't even begin to get our hands around how big this could be.
When will the first stadium open up a ticket window like they do at a racetrack, where you can place a bet right there on site while you're at the game?
You know what? It's going to be interesting to see what Vegas does, because, you know, they've got the hockey team right now, obviously, and they've got the football team coming there in a couple of years. And now that the stigma, whatever stigma was attached to gambling has been removed, I wonder. It's funny, at the Kentucky Derby, they actually have a betting window where in the media center. So you've got all these reporters who are going to write their stories, and they'll file something, and they'll head over and they'll try and cut their losses by betting on horse number 7 in the 8th race.
Well, like you said, I don't think there's any way to overstate exactly what kind of impact this will have on professional sports in the United States. It's crazy. And I'm frankly surprised that the Supreme Court was able to make this decision. But I think it's going to be interesting to watch what happens.
Yeah, it was basically the NCAA. Without getting too far into the legal thick, the NCAA had been trying to stop it. This had been set down for 25 years. This law had been, and so the Supreme Court decided to allow states to do what states want to do. That the NCAA couldn't trump the states' rules, and Trump with a lowercase T there, by the way. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting to see exactly how each sport tries to get in on this, and how each sport reacts to it with a sudden new influx of very, very, very interested viewers.
Jay Busby, Yahoo Sports, thanks so much for giving us some information regarding this story. And let's all be careful out there when we start to cash our paychecks at the betting parlors, okay?
Exactly. Amen.
And of course, it is Wednesday here on The Ralph Report, and that means Wednesday's not just any other day around here. No, no, no. Wednesday holds a special place in our heart because it's One Hit Wonder Wednesday.
It's the One Hit Wonder.
One Hit Wonder.
One Hit Wonders. It's a very common tale.
This week's One Hit Wonder for One Hit Wonder Wednesday comes from member of the Garmy, Nick Cordova. Nick sent this in. He said, this was probably already suggested. It wasn't already suggested. It was in my mind. I was already planning to get to this, but I'm glad you brought it up. Gives me a reason to talk about this particular song. One of my favorite one-hit wonders of all time. One of my favorite songs of all time, quite frankly. Why, you may ask? Well, the reason is multifold. One, because it was written by one of my favorite keyboardists and singer-songwriters. One of my favorite bands of all time is Asia. I'm a huge Asia fan. Being a kid of the 80s and growing up to that music made a big impression on me. And one of the members of Asia is a guy named Jeff Downes, played keyboards for that band and also wrote a lot of their smash hits, along with lead singer and bassist John Wetton, who is no longer with us, sadly. But before Asia, Jeff Downes was in a band with another legend, a guy named Trevor Horn, who was with Yes, and a bunch of great bands throughout the 70s and 80s. And another guy named Bruce Woolley. They had formed a band in the late 70s. And they together wrote a song that is a classic one-hit wonder. It was written in 1978. The band was formed in 1977. They released this song as their first single in 1979, September 7th of that year, as a matter of fact. And it instantly became a smash around the world. It really ranked on the charts of their home country in the UK, but other nations like Australia, Austria, France, Italy, Ireland, Spain, Sweden, Switzerland, even in Japan. It was in the top 10 in Canada, Germany, New Zealand, South Africa, Belgium, Netherlands. But perhaps its greatest claim to fame, other than being an awesome song, was that it was the very first music video ever shown on a brand new network called MTV in the United States at 12:01 a.m. on the 1st of August in 1981. This song was the very first video ever played on MTV. Ironic, given its point of view and its lyrics and its attitude. The band was the Buggles, and the song was Video Killed the Radio Star. How prophetic was that song when you think about it? MTV playing that song announced really the end of musicians for music's sake. You had to have a look now if you were going to make it in the music business, because you were going to be judged on your looks and your moves and your dancing and a lot of stuff that before you could just write a good song and it would be on the radio and you could be a star. Well, it got more complicated with music videos. Video Killed the Radio Star by the Buggles. Nick Cordova hit us up for that one. Thank you, Nick. I appreciate it. That is this week's One Hit Wonder.
It's the One Hit Wonder.
One Hit Wonder.
One Hit Wonders. It's a very common tale.
That's it for today. Thanks so much for hanging out, boys and girls. Tomorrow is a Thursday on the Ralph Report. That means, of course, Ralph's Sex University. We're finally going to get around to the furries. I made you a promise. We're going to talk furries tomorrow and all the latest showbiz news as well. Great announcement as well, including a special guest that hopefully we will have for you on Friday. Someone's going to be calling in talking about one of my favorite TV shows. A lot to talk about tomorrow, so I hope that will get you back here with me, because I get lonely when you're not around, because I love you, and I mean it. Bye.